It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are here on yet another glorious Saturday morning in North Florida. And the sun is shining. It's beautiful. It just couldn't be any better. And we are pleased that we are here. We are pleased that you are there. If you're a regular, welcome back. Thanks for always being there. And if you're new to the show, stick around. I don't know if you could be headed out to the beach cleanup or any number of things, have your radio on or working in the yard. There's a number of reasons to be anywhere today. But if you get your radio on and we happen to be there, let's just stick it out. And I promise we'll try to not only entertain you a bit, but also try to make it interesting and educational, because that's pretty much what we do here. We will have a trivia question, as usual, after the first break. And we will talk about the market. I'd rather not some days, but I will. Actually, I'll make Adam do it. But it wasn't a good week, but we've been talking about that, too, leading up to this. When you have 5 months, the likes of which we had gone through before April 1st, you got to know that something's going to change. And for the moment, at least, something has changed. In fact, there was only one surprise this morning when I started putting my notes together. I only had one surprise in the whole thing. That's that the Dow was actually up last week.
3 points.
3 points.
Not 3%.
No.
Three points for a total gain of 0.0%.
Exactly. But it's the only numbers on my sheet that aren't red.
There's some other areas, but
in the major index arena, it was something to plot out. But have you ever seen a day where the dichotomy between the Dow and the NASDAQ, the Dow was up something like 211 yesterday and NASDAQ down about 3?
I have seen it, but usually it's the other way around.
Yeah.
Where the NASDAQ is flying high and the Dow is flat.
Yeah.
Not so much this time. Yeah. We noted a few weeks ago that investor sentiment had gotten way too high, way too bullish. And this is exactly what happens when that happens. Investors, retail investors almost always get it wrong. Whenever they start to get excited about the market tends to drop and vice versa. So we cured that problem because investor sentiment is no longer too high. In fact, it's at its lowest point since November. And so it's funny how quickly that changes once the market turns south. And this was no exception to that. I did have the same one bit of positive news. I was actually shocked when I put my show notes together this morning that the Dow was up. It really didn't feel like anything was up this week. The S&P was definitely not up. It dropped 3%. The tech-heavy NASDAQ was down 5.5%. Really just a brutal week for the NASDAQ. But all three indexes,
one stock in particular.
Yeah, all three indexes are still positive for the year, though. So there is that. The Dow is clinging to a small 0.8% gain. The NASDAQ is up 1.8%, and the S&P is up 4.1%.
And 4% in 4 months?
Yeah.
That'd be a great year, wouldn't it?
It really would. It doesn't feel like that right now, but that is the result. So international stocks really didn't fare much better. China did manage a small gain of 0.4%. That was about it for the plus column that I could find internationally. Mexico was off 3.7%. European stocks were off 0.6. Asian stocks were off almost 2%. And the international index was down 1.5%. Emerging markets off 1.8. So just pretty bad all around. And Mexico has been kind of a high flyer lately, as has Japan. Their market also got really crushed by 3.7%. So anything that had been doing well internationally seems like it had a bad week. The price of oil also fell this week, which kind of almost counterintuitive, because you would think with all the turmoil in the oil producing area of the world that would not be the case, but it fell 3.3% and it dragged down the whole commodities index by 1.2%.
And it did spike when news of the retaliatory strike came. It spiked, and then everybody sat back and said, oh, well, that wasn't so bad, and then bottoms fell out.
Yeah, silver and gold actually helped the index. That was two things that were up this week. The silver posted a gain of 0.3% and gold was up 1.9%. So a nice week there. Bitcoin also has come down off its recent highs of more than 70,000. It ended the week at 63,674. And I see that a higher price has not made it any less volatile. That thing moves.
It moves.
In large quantities. It's pretty insane to watch it, how it trades. Higher interest rates also caused the bond market to fall again, with AGG dropping by 0.6%. Short treasuries remain pretty stable, while longer term dropped by more than 1.2%. So that, again, that's just a function of interest rates and what the Fed is doing or not doing. The market has really shifted its stance on rate cuts this year, and it's come more into line with what our view has been, is that they're not really necessary, or more than that. If they did them, it might be a little bit, it might hurt the economy more than help it. And so the rate cuts that are being priced in now is actually close to zero for the rest of the year. That's down from 6 rate cuts at the beginning of the year.
Yeah,
so that's
the difference is the 6 was never realistic.
No.
The 0 is realistic. And if anything, we might beat it a little bit. In other words, we could have one in September or July.
It may still happen. I can't really see a clear catalyst for it or need for it, but it definitely, you never know what the Fed is going to do.
No, and we like it just as it is anyway, because we have people, our clientele has enough money, all of them, to have an advisor for one, and a lot of them don't want to take too much risk, and for years we've had to take too much risk, but now when you can park your money at 5.2, wait and see what happens, or if you've got an RMD coming up and you want to get it out of the market and still make something on it, you can do that. So it has really made our lives a lot easier. I know in every rate change there are winners and losers, but we deal right now in the world of winners with increased rates.
Yep, no doubt about it. And the one place it really hurts is in real estate and trying to borrow for a mortgage. They're paying over 7% again, as yep. Angela was talking about that on the previous show. And
maybe
it really,
a long-term average, but it doesn't make anybody happy.
Exactly.
When they're used to 3.
When you're addicted to 0% interest rates, 7% seems outrageous, but it really is closer to the long-term average.
Yep. There's this thing called recency bias. You think, well, 2 years ago, my friend got a 3% mortgage. I should get one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, those 2 years can make a lot of difference. But that is not a reason not to buy. The best thing about these rates for mortgages is there's only one way to go, and that's down from there, because you freeze it at whatever you get. You wait for the market. When the market goes back down, then you have the ability to bring them down. But meanwhile, if the market goes up further, they can't sock it to you.
That's
so
right.
So getting locked in is all about winning.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. Well, we will be right back after a short break with all kinds of good stuff and a trivia question. So don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we do have, as usual, a trivia question brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Kenny at 904-636-7888. This one requires a little bit of introduction, just to get in the swing of things. It's about things that people regret having said because they were sort of off base. One of my favorites is Captain Edward John Smith, who said, "Even God himself couldn't sink this ship." Guess who he was captain of?
The Titanic.
That would be that one, yes. I kind of miss that. Then there's one of my favorite old Fed chairs, Ben Bernanke, who, has he ever gotten anything right? Let me think. No, that's
not
it.
Not really.
Back in January of 2008, Bernanke asserted that the Federal Reserve is currently not forecasting a recession. A month later,
yeah,
biggest recession anybody had seen in, well, since 29 probably, or the early 30s actually. All right, here's another one. Irving Fisher, he was an economist, October of 29, said the stock market had reached what looks like a permanently high plateau. I miss that a little bit too.
A little bit.
Even counting inflation. So mine has to do, how many of you remember the gigantic insurance company, AIG? They were humongous. A fellow named Hank Greenberg started it, and he was an absolute master of risk control. And he built an empire in AIG. And when he retired, people got into the corporate suite. They started doing things that he warned them about. He said, you're messing with the risk profile of this company. So in 2007, the head of financial products for AIG commented, I'm going to quote this, "It is hard for us, without being flippant, to even see a scenario within any kind of realm of reason that would see us losing $1 in any of these credit default swap transactions." He was absolutely right. They did not lose $1. They lost billions of dollars. How many billions? Just a round number, and you might be surprised. It's pretty ugly. All right, back to the market for a moment. Well, first off, why don't you tell people about your public service? Adam came in with very good news this morning.
Yeah, we've been talking about it on the radio every week, the Joe 14 Golf Classic. It's our friends set up a foundation to benefit the Mulligan Lab at St. Jude's in honor of their son who passed away from leukemia. The Mulligan Lab actually does research on the exact type of leukemia, which is very hard to treat, that took their son, and every year do a golf tournament over at Queens Harbor. Well, it sold out this week, so yay. I was going to say get on here and say sign up, but you can't. So just keep it in mind for next year. It's a great event, raised tons of money for a great cause.
And that was my point. I wanted Adam to bring it up because early in the March or April period next year, they're going to be announcing that year. So I want everybody to remember that if you want to play in it, once you hear that it's opened up for reservations, you better get in there because it sells out.
Yep, and it was it's always a really fun event, and I'm not surprised that it sold out again.
What day was it?
That's May 5th.
Okay, so in the first show after that, we'll give a little rundown of who had fun and the kind of prizes that got, that kind of thing, just to make sure everybody remembers that it is an opportunity that only comes once a year. So that's a good thing. Anyway, a little wrap up in the market.
Yeah, I just had one other thing I wanted to talk about. It's earnings season again, and so far, it's actually been really good. And over 75% of stocks that have reported have beaten on earnings, and over 66% have beaten on revenue. And yet, the reaction to all of those numbers has been a decline of, on average, 1%. Makes no sense.
As we say, there are times when all news is good news. There are times when news is news, and there are times when all news is bad news.
I consider that. So I think that the fact that that's been happening is good news because that's irrational.
Yep.
And that, to me, says that sooner or later, the market will become rational again and reward companies for beating their earnings, which is what's supposed to happen.
What do you suppose happened to America's darling, NVIDIA? I know the numbers. It's down a little over 21% this year. Why, when they're the acknowledged leader of AI, and AI is the acknowledged leader of the tech market, and the tech market is the acknowledged leader of the stock market, why so much, why so quickly? Could it be that it was overbought? Perhaps.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you never know. There's a lot of things that drive the market. But yeah, it's been a pretty big drop off from their peak. Let's see. It's looks like they were up about 91%, almost 92% this year, and now they are up just 53%. So pretty,
when you think
pretty
about
steep
it,
drop.
Is a pretty darn nice number.
It's still a good return. Yeah, that's year to date. So if you go back a year, it's going to be a lot better than that even.
Yeah, we've been watching the sentiment from the mom-and-pop investors. They would call them the odd lot people who can't afford 100 shares of things. When they start buying up a few shares of this and that and just going wild and their enthusiasm is off the charts, that's a good time to sit back and watch. because it's not good news for the market.
Yeah, the one-year return on NVIDIA is still 173%. So, you know, even if you took a haircut on it, you're still okay.
You know, if you don't want to sell it because of your profit, well, think about it. People do strange things in the market in the name of taxes.
Yep.
Many, many strange things.
It is hard to stomach a pitting capital gains, especially if it's short-term.
Well, and I think there's a lot of that in the Bitcoin arena, too.
Yeah.
In the cryptos. People, they look at it and say, well, I'd have to pay $100,000 in taxes.
Right.
Yeah, but you keep the other $300,000.
Exactly.
And you took your risk from astronomical to none. Mm-hmm. So perhaps, you know, my old theory is once you can get your money out with a nice profit, you're playing with house money.
Yeah.
So if you're up 250, 300%, get all your money out. I kind of like the number 30%. You might want 50% if it's risky. Just take that off the table. Everything that's left is money you didn't have to put into it. The market gave it to you. And sit back and enjoy yourself. It's irrational. There's a lot of things about the market that are irrational. And there's a lot of advisors that are equally irrational. In fact, I got one of my stories this week is called "Is Your Advisor Ripping You Off?" And I don't know why it took a guy a whole page to say it, because the answer is simple: not if you're doing business with Fanway Financial.
That, I'm sure that wasn't the focus of the article.
Should have been.
Maybe.
He was talking about all kinds of things, and I've read a few stories lately too. Don't forget, if you are considering dealing with someone, if you want a huge company, you're going to get a stockbroker. If you want a small personal company, look for a registered investment advisor doing business like we do, fee only. And if you're in between, then you just shop around. But no matter who it is that you're thinking of going with, look it up on BrokerCheck. It's free to you. And it will tell you if there are any black marks against this person that he or she perhaps failed to disclose. So always remember, verify what you're about to do before you do it. Also remember, if you put your money with someone, don't make the check out to that someone, and make sure that everything you own is on an independent third-party website 24/7 where you can see what your money is, where it is, and what it's in every minute of every day. Because if you can't see it, it might be gone. Real simple. I can't say it often enough, though I try, but it's a very important rule of thumb and rule of life. Just make sure who you're dealing with and make sure where it's going is the right place. That one of the reasons we talked last week about the accredited investor rule changing. You don't want too many people being sold things or buying things that aren't sitting right there in your face on a public website. And that's what accredited investors are able to do, and that's why they want it to be easier for people so they can get their money. Resist it. It just doesn't pay. All right. Retail sales. You looked at those?
Yeah, they were up 0.7% in March. So not a bad number. It's actually the first time in 3 months they've been higher than the month before.
They also revised February up from 0.6 to 0.9. But that all followed the January loss of 1.1%. This shows the sort of folly that says don't rely on a single month statistic for anything, because you can have some weird things like an extra holiday or the day something cuts off or one little piece of news, and all of a sudden, the world is falling apart. That's what
The other problem is retail sales include gasoline. So
exactly.
When gas is up, retail sales tend to go up. Yeah, and that's what happened this month.
Yeah, if you look at gas stations and things like that and strip them out. I mean, I can even give you a good inflation number right now. I just take rent out of the last few months, and everything looks a lot better.
Actually, I have some more about that after the break.
Okay, good. We will do it. When we come back, I got a few things to say about taxes and some other good news items. I feel like I've been kind of on the negative side lately, and there really are some good things going on out there that are interesting to know about. So I don't want you to think all is gloom and doom. So stay tuned. We'll take a little break. Be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we still have a trivia question open. How many billions of dollars did AIG lose on credit default swaps in 08 after saying that there was no way they could think of where they'd lose so much as a dollar? It's a pretty good sized number. I already told you that because I'm looking for the number of billions that were lost. He had to spend a lot of time earning those billions before they lost them. That guy was really smart. I used to see him on TV every once in a while. Very, very brilliant man. Good news. May not sound like it on its face. If you have an individual K plan with Vanguard, they're going to go out of the business. Now, that may sound like, uh-oh, to you, but I know some other places that do them and do them very well. And, in fact, we own one of those very places.
We own one?
We own
Well, Schwab does 401k.
No, we own the firm. You do, actually. Yes, Schwab has a very good individual K plan. So if you are active in your business and you use a personal K plan because of the extraordinary ability to dump money into it and you're looking for an alternative, give us a call at 904-685-1505 and we'll talk about it. So Vanguard's loss could be our gain and your gain together because that's the nature of our business. We do better when you do better. Like I said, we've done a lot of them, and we each have one personally. It's just, to me, it's kind of the ultimate in retirement savings plans for people who have an LLC or self-employment or something like that.
Yeah, you can really sock away a huge amount of money, over 60 grand a year, depending on your age and some other factors.
Yeah, to the best of my knowledge, when they started out, I was the first one in town to talk about them on the radio and the first one in town to open one for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And then you started hearing more and more about them. It truly is just a gift. I wish a lot of things. I wish the government would make it a little more convenient to put that kind of money in for other people who aren't in the perfect situation. But as Rumsfeld would say, you go to war with the army you've got, and the army we've got right now, the personal K plan is the single best thing I've come across, unless you are so wealthy and so steady in your profession that you can do an actual personal pension plan. But I have never done one. And I've never had a client who did. When we talk about them and explain the potential pitfalls, this seems like a better idea.
Yeah, those are, you can put away even more money, tax deferred, and those.
If you miss a payment,
yep,
you are in bad shape.
You can be in trouble. I did want to talk about rents because I saw a great headline on MarketWatch this week. It said, rents have finally stopped skyrocketing. They're now stuck at a price most Americans can't afford. And I think that's pretty accurate. It's not that rents are not rising anymore. They still are. But they're rising at the long-term rate of inflation, which is closer to 3.5% a year instead of they were going crazy during post-pandemic years, 10, 15% a year, and just to a level that most people could not renew the lease on the current place that they were at because it was so expensive. So that's gone away. Now it's returned to a more normal market. The problem is because we saw those years of 15% inflation, they're much, much higher than they used to be. The average price for rental units nationwide is $1,959 now.
Ooh. And that by definition is post-tax.
Yes, it is. And that is also, I mean, that's a mortgage on what used to be a pretty nice place. And that now that doesn't really buy very much with the price of houses combined with higher interest rates. But it's such a big number to me. Having rented in the past, I never paid anywhere near that. That's crazy to me.
It is. It's just nuts. Obviously, we still have a supply problem. I heard Angela talking about this when I was on the way in today, and the supply is better than it was. It's still rising. but it's still not all that good. And when you look at a place like Jacksonville and see what goes up, I mean, every day, drive anywhere, these gigantic apartment complexes are going up all over the place. It's hard to believe we could ever be in a shortage until you look at the stats about who's moving here.
Yeah, and but that's unique to this area. Yeah. That's not true everywhere. Renters are now spending more than 30% of their income on housing, which is kind of the historical target to not spend more than 30%. And now people are spending more than that on a regular basis.
Yeah, and you, back when I was younger, you couldn't get a mortgage if you couldn't prove that you were going to stay under that number for your housing expense.
In fact, the article states that in Florida, 54% of renters are paying more than 30% of their income for housing.
The next topic is I got a good part of the next topic. When you add the typical insurance on a home now, and property taxes are not cheap either, but the problem Florida's had lately is property insurance. It has been outrageous and jumping quickly. Well, we've got a little ray of light this week when we found out that three Florida insurance companies have announced a rate reduction. Now, these are not going to just float you away and into never land, because it's not that good of news, but you got to admit the change in direction is good. So Florida Peninsula Insurance announced a 2% average reduction for more than 122,000 residential policies and for new policies and new renewals in July. Slide Insurance Company is seeking a 0.5% decrease in the average rate it charges to insure single-family homes. Now, there again, a 0.5% doesn't sound like much, but that's opposed to a 15, 20, 25% increase. It looks pretty good, real good. Florida Family Insurance Company also seeking a 0.5% decrease, and that will accrue to another gigantic number of people. Citizens Insurance has been intentionally reducing its policyholders. If you've been here a while, you understand that Citizens was never meant to be the biggest insurance company in the state. It got there the old-fashioned way by having everybody have it as a last resort because companies weren't writing them, they were raising the prices too high. So they got on it, and it has helped. They actually made some money this year. The Citizens made $746 million. In 2022, they lost $2.2 billion. So they're becoming a better insurer for those who need them, and there are less people that are needing them. So they have cut down the number of policyholders a lot. That's all on the good news side, but it isn't all of the good news. At the same time, 8 new property insurance companies are coming to Florida, and that is expected to promote market stability. We're still number one. Price to insure a home in Florida remains the highest in the U.S. because insurance premiums rose 68% from May of 21 to May of 23. Now, is that a sustainable thing for most people? 68% in 2 years?
Most likely no.
No. And again, it's not even deductible. Nobody helps you with it. So getting these new people in, the Orion 180, Manatee Insurance, you got to be a little bit careful. Some of these things, I'm not saying they're fly-by-night companies, but they do not have a track record in Florida.
In Florida, yeah.
And what you want to make sure of is that if you do have a claim, that that claim will get paid and that the company has the wherewithal to get behind it. But having 8 more come in is going to make everybody else be more competitive. I think you're just at the beginning of these rate reductions. Now, we can always help a little bit by just crossing our fingers and hoping that this hurricane season is a nothing burger. It really hurt the couple of years we had the big ones going on, and we're still trying to recover. But it is good news, all in all. Another one, IRS halts unannounced home visits. And up until 3 years ago, I didn't realize that IRS made unannounced home visits.
I had no idea.
And unfortunately, the way we learned about it was when it became political, because the new Biden administration was sending people out to Trump supporters, and the wording is in the law, they are supposed to arrive unarmed, which they didn't, and they're supposed to have some kind of evidence that there's something going on badly, and that the, if they announced their visit, that these people might try to hide money offshore and things like that. Now, I think if you really get down to it, having a handful of bad people out there is no reason for them to violate our civil rights and intrude on us. So the new rules, apparently, the new policy, says that they will make contact through an appointment letter. It's called a 725B letter, and schedule a follow-up meeting. That way, you'll have a little time to prepare for what's happening. Now, will some people move money offshore and that sort of thing, knowing they're coming? Sure, but that's why they employ all these forensic accountants and some of the best investigators anywhere. This is just another little way that we're going to take back some of our privacy that's been intruded on and some of our rights. So I'm very, very happy to read about that. See, not everything is bad news. Got a little bit more, too. How close are we? A few seconds? 30 seconds. I can't do this until right after the break, but there's another ruling on inherited IRAs that is very important for a handful of our clients and a few other people around. Hopefully some are listening. But don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with that and more. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And the lines are open, 904-222-8255, where you can take a shot at the trivia question. How many billions of dollars did insurance giant AIG lose in credit default swaps that they were absolutely confident were just fine? Big number, folks. Okay, people who inherit IRAs, the rules changed for the original owner's deaths that were after 1999, meaning January 1, 2020, they started. Did I say 2019? I hope I did. Anyway, it used to be that almost anybody could stretch an IRA out over his or her lifetime once it was inherited. That went away, and it was kind of a give and take. And we actually, once it happened, we came on the show and said, I can live with that, because the rule as it was stated looked pretty good.
Yeah, it was okay. I mean, it's not ideal for some people, but no. The amount of people that use the stretch rule is minuscule compared right. to the amount of people that need the money and take it out before that yep. period anyway.
Well, ever since then, they found out that the law was unclear, and they're having so much trouble clearing it up.
They made it less clear.
Less clear.
Yeah. After the fact. Yep. It's the worst rule in financial planning, tax code, whatever. It's
and it's still
terrible.
Ambiguous, except that it's been interpreted to not be ambiguous.
Except that it's not a done deal on no. the way that it's been interpreted, which I think is flat out wrong.
Got it, too.
And
well, it's 2024.
Yeah, this happened
and
years ago.
And they can't
ago.
Get this straight.
It's so irritating to me. The rules are so complicated that...
Arcane.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
And the fact that we're professionals and we find it convoluted, imagine the average person yeah. inheriting an IRA. What how are they even going to know what to do?
Yeah. Well, instead of the lifetime stretch on it, they implemented a 10-year rule. Now, it was commonly understood among people who do these things, like the two of us, that, okay, so here's the trade-off. You don't have to take any out the first 9 years. If you don't want to, you can. You can always withdraw from an IRA. That's never an issue. But you don't have to. And when you do the stretch, you had to take it out every year, but you didn't have to take out very much. But under the new ruling, what we all assumed and read was that by the end of the 10th year, you had to drain the account completely.
Mm-hmm.
So you think about it. I can't take it out over my lifetime, but I've got 10 years of tax-deferred growth with the option of taking it out any time up to the last day of the 10th year following death. Okay. So we said, fine.
Yeah.
Well, then there was an interpretation on the tax court that said, no, that's not how it works. You still have to take money out every year, have to take your RMDs, but you can only do it 10 times and it's got to be drained. Well, we didn't gain anything by that. That's not a trade-off. That's a shot at the over the bow of that, regular people.
And it was a total shock to everyone because that's not what the law said.
No.
At all. And honestly, I can't believe that hasn't been overturned yet.
So they're in trying to get it straight, they realized it was too late to implement that for 2021, so they waived the requirement for 2021. 2022's discussions didn't go any better, so they waived the requirement for 2022. They still couldn't figure it out, so they waived the requirement for 2023, and they still haven't figured it out because they just waived it for 2024.
Yep, and I wouldn't be surprised if it takes over 10 years for them to figure this out.
Instead of solving the problem, I mean, it just goes away.
Just go with the original law, which was very clear. It said you have 10 years. It's your discretion. And the beauty of that is that you can tax plan. The government gets their way because the money comes out in 10 years no matter what. And you get to plan around your income. And the reason that's important is that money coming out of an IRA is taxed as ordinary income. Right. So whatever you make, if you make $100,000 and then you take out $50,000 from an IRA, that you made $150,000. So the planning around that is really important, especially if you're, say, I don't know, 60 and you're going to retire at 65. And then you have five more years to pull that out where you have no income. That's going to be taxed at a much lower rate. So it was something we could all live with, and then the IRS had to go and screw it all up.
Yep. Speaking of tax planning, another reason this is hurting us, we have a lot of clients and friends so on who are considering Roth conversions. And when you're trying to plan a Roth conversion, it's very important how much money you're going to make. And when you have an unexpected RMD come out of another account, and you've done your Roth planning, well, that would have been okay under the old laws for Roth conversions because you could undo it the next year. You can't do that anymore.
Nope.
So if you guess wrong and then you have to take an RMD, all of a sudden you shoot up in tax bracket and it can come back and bite you with your IRMA surcharges from Medicare. And it's just wrong. You've got to be able to plan these things. Another thing just sort of moderately related to this, you cannot take any money out of an inherited IRA and convert it to a Roth. That money has to come out in cash, period. The only way you can convert money to a Roth is from a traditional IRA or traditional 401k. A lot of people have asked that, and it's just unable to be done. So the good news portion of this is that for 2024, people who inherited IRAs from people who died later than 2019, just like Biden, I'm the 20th century. That's what he said this week.
You said it.
After 2019, you do not, once again, have to take your first RMD. And I would put about an even dollar on whether or not you'll have to next year. I don't think they're ever going to straighten this out.
Just change the rule. Yeah, it's so dumb.
So simple. And they're dealing with the revisions to the Secure Act 2.0 constantly. Well, all you do is clarify this in 2.0, and you're done.
Nowhere in the original law does it say that you have to take an RMD from an inherited at any time. And so this tax court ruling just literally came out of nowhere.
Yep. Well, the other thing, I know a lot of people understand this, but if you inherit a Roth IRA, you have to take RMDs. But at least it doesn't mess up your tax planning because they're not taxable.
Right.
The money you earn on the money that's withdrawn is going to be taxable later on, but you don't have to pay tax on that. So we do an awful lot of tax planning in our day jobs, and these questions come up, and I hate it when we sit there and say, I'm not sure because they haven't told us yet, year after year after year.
Yep.
And it's, we have to deal in that. Not fun, nor is it for our clients. All right, here's one. You've heard all the talk about TikTok, right? Big controversy right now. Should it be banned and so on? I don't know how many of you know who Kim Komando is. She's the digital goddess. She'd probably been on the radio and TV longer than almost anybody else talking about these things. Very credible. She has a reputation that would be 20 years in the making and could be 5 minutes to lose, and she doesn't take that chance. So when my wife comes up with something pertinent that Kim said, I read through it and say, okay, that's interesting enough to put on air. This one's about TikTok. Here's what TikTok knows about you if you're a user. Your name, age, username, email, password, phone number, and location. Your IP address, cell carrier, time zone, the model of your device and its operating system. Biometric identifiers like facial IDs and voice prints. The content of your messages, along with when you send, receive, and read them. If you buy stuff from TikTok Shop, you're giving up your purchase info, including your credit card number, billing, and shipping addresses. Your activities on other websites and apps or in stores, including your purchase info. File names and file types. Keystroke patterns and rhythms. Objects and scenery that show up in your videos, including tourist attractions, shops, and other landmarks. The sites you visit most and how you interact with them. Any text, images, and videos on your clipboard. Info about your videos, images, and audio. And on the next page, the time and date you view a page, complete with a description. The amount of data is so extensive, it can almost clone your phone. Now you decide if you want to be on it. Better yet, you decide if you're going to let your kids be on it.
Yeah.
I found that scary.
Mine are not.
Good. I actually did find that scary. Well, let's do a little more on taxes. It is Financial Literacy Month for one more show, and a lot of what we've been talking about is taxes. There aren't enough details on this to go through it big time, but I want to touch on it. Trump is now kind of coming on board with a few of his favorite advisors like Laffer and Kudlow, and thinking 17% flat tax. Of course, the biggest proponent of flat tax in forever is Steve Forbes. He is also on this. It's an informal advisory group that Trump talks to. I went back, and I think everybody, because you probably, a lot of you now will have your 2023 tax return. Look in the back, and almost everybody will have this page in it. It's just a comparison of all of your data from 2021, 22. And then they'll add on 23 and probably drop off 2020. I don't know about the new one because I haven't had mine yet. But down at the bottom, there are two numbers. One of them is the marginal tax rate. That simply means what tax rate will I pay on the next dollar I earn. And the one before that is the effective tax rate. The effective tax rate says, out of all the money I earned, I paid this much. What was the average taxable amount of all of that? Mine came out to be 17 and then 21, so I think I would be better off. You should see what you think. AIG lost $99 billion after promising their shareholders that they could not see a way where they could lose so much as $1. Wow. Remember 2008? We do. I sure would rather be able to forget it.
Yeah.
It's funny how much time has gone by, and we've I don't know that we're completely over it yet, but we're close enough to over it.
If you go back and look at a 20-year chart in the market, though, 2008, go and look at it. It looks tiny.
As horrible as it was, it doesn't look that big. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week, same place. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.